Welcome to Explanation of Benefits, a patient podcast. Join J.R. Clark and Dr. Jay Moore as they explore the complex intersection of healthcare and insurance. Whether you're not sure about the difference between a premium and a deductible, or looking for expert insights on the future of employee benefits, everyone can use an explanation of benefits. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Jay and J.R.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the EOB podcast, the Explanation of Benefits podcast from Patient. I am your host, Jay Moore, and I'm here with J.R. Clark. J.R., it is a bright and sunny day in some undefined time of year here in Missouri. How are you doing today?
I am just enjoying that bright, sunny day, Jay.
Now, we were talking before the podcast started. Of course, we record a little bit in advance. And so it's always a question of, you know, do we talk about what's happening today or do we talk about what's going on at the point that we think the podcast is going to drop to the public? And I don't know, what's your opinion on this, JR? Do you think, should we pretend that it's a month or two in the future or should we just, talk about our day just like it's normal? I'm not sure what the zeitgeist is on this, you know?
Well, two things. Number one, I don't know what zeitgeist means.
And I don't number think two, I do either.
Number two, I'm looking at the dirty looks of our producers, and I think that I know the answer from their looks.
The dirty looks of the producers say, why are you talking about this? How come you haven't just started talking about your topic? Our producers, of course, Ryan and Morgan, always a shout out to the two of them, the two greatest, most hardest working people at our entire company on our marketing team that help us get this podcast running and off the ground. Any complaints can be directed to them.
Particularly complaints about airing your email address on the last podcast.
right. Still haven't gotten any emails, by the way. No emails about topics for the future, nor emails about how to pronounce, what the right pluralization is of various appetizer foods. So you have to go back and listen to previous episodes to learn more about that. But let's move on to our topic today. We're doing something a little bit different today. We're not talking about definitions of insurance or specifics on how an insurance plan works, as we've done in the past. We've talked about the difference between a PPO and an HMO. We've talked about networks and how they're built. We've talked about all sorts of very insurance-specific topics. But today, we're actually going to talk about a study that our very astute producer, Ryan, was able to find. And he pointed it out to us and said, I think this is something you guys should talk about. And this is a study that was published very recently in the Journal of Health Economics in March. And it's about the effect of high deductible health plans and how high deductible health plans affect low value spending in people who have private or commercial health insurance. So I think this is a really interesting study. There were some fascinating things that they found and they were able to look at it, and it actually corroborates some of the experience that other studies have found as well. But to get started, JR, why don't you remind us, what is a high deductible health plan? What does that mean? How can our audience know what that is?
So specifically for a high deductible health plan, for kind of a federal rule of it, it's for any health plan that has a $1,400 or higher deductible and also has an out-of-pocket maximum attached to it that's less than, I think it's around $7,050. The whole idea behind it is that the health plan is not supposed to pay for any services other than preventive care, and I think during COVID time, some COVID testing as well. Other than that, the health plan shouldn't pay anything until the person has spent their full deductible amount.
So what that means is that there are no co-pays on this type of plan. So that means if I go see my own individual doctor and it's an $85 doctor visit, people might be used to having a co-pay on that sort of service. The primary care plan maybe has a $25 co-pay. You pay your $25 and the insurance covers the rest. So in these high deductible health plans, what happens is that the person who's getting the care has to pay that full amount, that full $85 contracted amount between the health plan and the provider. And they keep paying until they hit their deductible. Do I have that right?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. And one other background thing real quick, Jay, I think it's important to note is that the whole purpose behind these plans when they were set up was that if you have a person paying for the first portion of their care, then they're going to be a more engaged consumer in their overall health spend, which means if you're more engaged in your consumption of healthcare, you're going to question things and say, am I I getting the best dollar or best benefit for the dollar I'm spending?
All right. So tell me the tell me, do these work, do you think?
I think there are aspects of them that do and aspects that don't, and we can get into the study of it. But I know from our experience on the health plan side, you know, we had when we first rolled these out, I think it was back in like, you know, I want to say it's like 2008 to 2010 timeframe, somewhere in that ballpark. We had thought that there'd be like a 15% savings somewhere in that ballpark immediately because people would be more engaged in their care consumption. And you know, so we baked it in to the pricing and we lowered the rates for these plans. And at the end of the day, you know, as years went by, we were seeing that it wasn't anywhere near the savings that was anticipated. So that 15% dwindled to 12 to 9 and so on until eventually, you know, the savings wasn't anywhere near that.
What would you think the savings would be today, if not that high? We expected 15% maybe when they first came out. If you were to look at a high deductible health plan today and compare it to the savings, you know, to the spend in a regular health plan that has a more normal traditional deductible, where do you think the savings would be?
Well, let me clarify real quick, because when I say 15%, I mean 15% purely kind of on a, for lack of better words, I'll say apples to apples basis, just solely due to consumer engagement, you'd get 15% savings. Then you'd have additional savings just solely because the, you know, the plan isn't paying until later as well. So, you know, in general, if you were looking at it kind of truly as what would a savings be for both the combination of the deductible being higher and consumer engagement, it's still probably 10%+, maybe even 15-20 in some cases.
I'm going to back you up just a little bit because I think I followed along with what you were saying, but I just want to make sure that we dig into that. So you're saying that really there are two reasons that money is saved in this type of health plan. One reason that money is saved is the obvious one, which is if the deductible is higher, the insurance plan doesn't kick in until later on, which means the total outlaid dollars by the insurance plan is going to be lower than if the deductible was lower. Like that's pretty simple to understand, right? That's one savings bucket.
Right.
And then there's another savings bucket that is more about consumer engagement, which means that the person thinks about where they're getting their care and shops around a little bit more than they would otherwise because they know that they're on the hook for it. And so they'll go to some place that maybe is less expensive, but still has care that they can afford and tolerate. So they're more engaged as a shopper than they would be if they did not have a high deductible health plan. Is that right?
You've got it. That's exactly right.
Okay. So between both of those aspects, the cost overall is lower. And we've all seen articles and read things over the last 10 or 15 years about healthcare expense and how expensive things are getting and how the price is just going up and up and up. And a lot of the cost is borne by employers. So this is, we've talked about this in previous episodes. The cost of these health plans is subsidized by private employers. And at some point, they cried uncle and said, what can we be doing to maybe reduce the rate of increase of these health plans? So, health plans are getting more and more expensive. So they go to the carriers and they say, can you work with me here and figure out a way to come up with a health plan where I'm still able to provide insurance to my employees, but maybe I'm not spending 5 or 10% more every single year, year after year after year, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, and as they cried, from your terminology, cried uncle on it, the adoption was actually pretty quick. I think when we look back at 2010, there were only something like maybe 10% of employers or 10% of employees that were on plans like these. Employers weren't really pushing for them at that point. But if you look at now, like 2020, 2021, you've got like 3 out of 10 folks that are sitting on these high deductible health plans.
Right, right. Okay, so let's move on to the study. So what the study showed, and again, this was a study that was published in the Journal of Health Economics. The author of the study was Brendan Rabideau. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, so apologies to Brendan if you're listening to this podcast. Also listed are Matthew Eisenberg, Rachel Reed, and Niraj Sood. And they published this article, and what they were looking at was how spending changed over time with people who had high deductible health plans. And a couple of the interesting findings were, first of all, that moving from a traditional PPO to a high deductible health plan, for people who had behavior health issues, the probability of seeking care for behavior health issues was lowered. They found that the number of health services was lower among patients who had mental health disorders who moved from a PPO to a high deductible health plan in terms of office visits, prescription drug fills, inpatient days, and emergency department visits. So all of these things reduced in people who had high deductible health plans. And furthermore, utilization of preventive services was lower among people who have high deductible health plans. So let's break that apart and talk about those things one by one. Let's start with the issues with behavior health. So JR, is that a surprise to you? Like when you think about the effect of a high deductible health plan, would you think that it would have an effect on mental health services more than it would have for other types of services?
That's a good question. I definitely think it would have an impact. I mean, really any time that, you know, we have to think about the dollar we're spending, we're going to put a little more thought behind it. There is a consequence that happens there when you think about it from a healthcare spend side of things that, you know, in certain cases, particularly with mental health spend, you might have had folks in this pool that basically said, you know what, it's not worth the spend to me to pay for the healthcare to get it done, to get services done to help me with my condition. So I don't know if that directly answers your question, but yeah, I could see this happening. It's just, it is very interesting to see that it's higher on mental health.
One of the things that was interesting is that when they compared what they called low value services compared to all services, the reduction in spend was greater. So in other words, with low value, what they mean are things that are less expensive. So less expensive outpatient services under a high deductible health plan decreased by 13.7% with a high deductible health plan. All outpatient expenses were down by 5.2%. So the overall spend decreased by about 5%, but the spend for lower value, lower cost services was down by 14%. And again, JR, I think this would match up with sort of what you would expect, right? Because it's those lower value services, the things that are less expensive, that are more likely to be coming along that would be out-of-pocket expenses that people would pay for before they hit the deductible. Is that right?
That's correct.
Interesting. So the other item in this study was that preventive services decreased. So in a high deductible health plan, now you mentioned earlier when you're talking about a high deductible health plan, preventive services are still required to be covered. If something is preventive, it's supposed to be $0, right?
That's right. That's correct. Yeah. Under the Affordable Care Act, when that was passed, that came into being.
And these high deductible health plans are all going to be, I mean, the great majority of them are going to be subject to the ACA's rules, right? Because these are newer plans that have come out on the market.
Right.
Why do you think it would be that preventive services decreased? These are not services that people are paying for. So why would the high deductible portion of this, you know, why would that make a difference in terms of what people were going out to get?
Well, one of the reasons is, you know, let's just take your standard primary care visit, your annual preventive visit. If you walk through the door at the primary care office and you say, hey, you know, I'm here for my annual visit, then that's all fine. It's all covered. But if you start talking specifically about other conditions that you might have, if your doctor services you for those conditions, in some cases, the doctor may end up billing that as a non-preventive visit. And at the end of the day, you're going to actually receive a bill for the service. And so,
right.
I know you've had experience on this too. I know you made a comment around, you know, folks are suspicious of whether or not their service is going to be free. And I think it's because of those kind of, for lack of better words, I'll say add-ons that could end up costing them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see this sometimes with preventive screening tests as well. So a colonoscopy, for example, sometimes you have a colonoscopy that's done. It's meant to be a screening colonoscopy. But because there's been some finding somewhere in the past, the doctor might say, well, this isn't really preventive anymore. Now we're surveilling. So we found something that's unusual in the past. Now we're looking again. So it's not necessarily the same thing as, you know, going in clean with a colonoscopy and having a preventive visit. And people can be surprised because they'll say, well, I thought this colonoscopy was going to be covered at 100%. And, you know, now I'm getting a bill for $1,500 and it's for this colonoscopy and I don't have $1,500 and I wasn't planning on doing that. And because it's a high deductible health plan, I owe all of it. So I'm going to have to now come up with the money to pay that visit. And it's a little bit, you know, I won't say that it's done on purpose. I don't think that doctors or hospitals are trying to, you know, trick people into getting care and then making them pay for it. By no means do I think that's happening, but I think that insurance rules are complicated and people don't always know. And, you know, if that happens to you once and you get burned by that, then you might be a little bit more suspicious later on when somebody says, well, this preventive visit is covered. And you're going to say, well, I mean, I was told that before and it wasn't. So I think you're onto something there, JR, about why that might be. It's that people are not stupid. They understand what has happened in the past. They know how these things work, and they don't want to get stuck with that high bill again.
Right. So, Jay, one other thing that popped up in the survey, and I know I'm probably taking off from where maybe you were heading, but I thought was interesting, was that, you know, back when we were first setting pricing for these high deductible health plans back on the insurance side, you know, one of the things that we always had as a, I'll say part of it was experience, but part of it was just a guess, was that, you know, when somebody hits their deductible or their out-of-pocket maximum, they've actually had a long way of spending a lot of dollars out of their pocket, right? Like if you have a $5,000 deductible plan and you're paying $5,000 out of your pocket before your health insurance really kicks in, by the time you get there, like you reach that deductible, it's like, it's perfect time for you to pile on services, right? If you know you're going to have something that you could get done in that year that's going to basically be covered by the health insurance plan, you're going to go ahead and get it done.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I know one of these things said that in the survey, it said high deductible health plan participants were more likely to have declined a medical procedure because of costs, which we would have expected. But further, once someone reaches their deductible, the research found that they were more likely to use low value healthcare services. So they hit their deductible, they're more likely now to go ahead and use services beyond that.
Right. Not surprising, right?
Not surprising at all.
People are smart. They understand how these things work. They realize, oh gosh, I've hit my deductible. It's time for me now to go out and do some more things. And so you get all of this delayed care, which isn't great, because we've talked about this before too, that when you delay care, things get more expensive. And we don't want people doing that.
Yep.
You know, this is kind of the way that things are right now. High deductible health plans are out there. That's the type of plan that a lot of employers are providing. And I'm not, you know, I'm not, I don't want to throw anything under the bus here. I understand that there are reasons that we have gotten here, because healthcare is expensive and people are looking for ways to try to save money. And at the same time, as a doctor, I think I'm concerned about what the effect is that these plans might have on people's health. Because if people do have trouble paying for things and they're not going to get their preventive visits or they're not going to get their routine care that they need, that's not great. It means that their health is not under good control, and that has costs that will just continue to increase in the long run. But not only costs from a dollar perspective, but just from a quality of life perspective. I mean, I'm a doctor. I care about people's health. I want people to be healthy. This seems to be something that is going to make it more difficult for that to occur, which is sort of the opposite direction that we want to go. So I'm curious, JR, if you have ideas and thoughts, like what kind of things are out there that help people mitigate this and, you know, and get people to a better place when they have this kind of health plan?
Well, I mean, I think number one is really that, and this is an education item for employers with their employees specifically, but, you know, that routine care, that routine preventive visit, even though folks may have been stung by that in the past, it's really important to educate your employees to let them know, like, take full advantage of that portion of your benefit every single year. Get all of your routine visits taken care of so you can catch things early. But then beyond that, for any kind of, you know, diagnostics that need to happen or anything that comes as a kind of a downstream side, you know, I mean, obviously you and I both work at Patient and I'm here to plug this, but, you know, with Patient, the whole idea behind it is to be able to spread those costs out over time, so it's not too much of a hit. So if somebody has a $1,000 diagnostic service done, you know, it's hard for people to write a $1,000 check to get that care done. It's a lot easier to pay $100 per month over 10 months for a service.
I agree. And obviously we have a perspective and a viewpoint, and, you know, we work here because we like it. We like the product and we think that it's helpful. Also, I think that just HRAs in general, so those are plans where employers put some money into the bank and allow that to be used to help pay for services for people before they hit their deductible, that can be helpful. And we really shouldn't underestimate the importance of a health savings account, an HSA. An HSA is really important when paired up with a high deductible health plan, because, you know, when you are, like you and I are, JR, super young, good looking, in the prime of our lives, and so we don't have a lot of healthcare expense. So we're getting some laughs from the producer's booth here. Cause, well, I don't know about you, JR, but I surely am no longer young, but, you know, I've got some good years here and don't necessarily have any major medical expenses. This is a perfect time for me to be putting some money in the bank so that, you know, maybe next year or two or three or four or five or 10 years from now, when I do have health expenses and the deductible is high, I've got something that I can lean on and pull out and use to pay off some of those expenses. So that's really critically important from just a financial wellness perspective and should really be emphasized, and people should be educated on how to use that HSA and how to save it and not to pull it out for, you know, don't put money into your HSA and then pull it out to pay for a $100 doctor visit. Like, use the investment option in the HSA, put the money in your account, let it grow over time, save it for when you need it. I think that people should feel very comfortable if they have an amount in their HSA that's equal to the deductible in a health plan that they might have.
Absolutely.
So that's, you know, I think that's really critical to think about as time goes on. None of us wants to get hit by that bill and not know how to pay for it.
Yep. Well said.
Okay. So, well, this is great. I think that this is a lot of fun to talk to you about this, and really, I hope, illustrates the way that we'd like to proceed, where we find something like this and talk about it from a clinical perspective, but also from a payer perspective, and think about how plan design might affect people's decisions and how these things might come up. So, hey, Ryan, thank you for finding this article and giving it to us to talk about. It was really terrific. And as always, JR, thank you for being my partner and co-host here on this podcast. I think that's going to pretty much wrap it up for today. Anything you'd like to add before we go?
No, thank you, OJ. Always a great discussion.
All right, everybody, thanks very much. This has been the EOB podcast from Patient. We will see you next time.